This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
And hey, everybody. I'm Jake Lancaster. I'm an internal medicine physician and the Chief Medical Officer for the Baptist Medical Group.
Well, folks, we have a dear friend today, Tyson Heaton, and many of y'all may know Tyson. He worked at the famous O.C. Tanner for many, many years, and that's where Tyson and I got to know each other, and very involved with the Shingo Institute, very involved with a lot of things, and these days he's working with the Lean Enterprise Institute, and he's been super involved with this symposium called The Future of Work, and Tyson and I were recently talking about it, and we thought this would be a great podcast and conversation, but before we jump too quickly. Tyson, if you would, introduce yourself to our audience, who you are, what's your background, and kind of what was the purpose of this Future of Work symposium?
Yeah, so I'm Tyson Heaton, a senior director at Lean Enterprise Institute. I work with their co-learning strategy and coaching partnerships with various clients. Long-time background in Lean, but was bit by the bug years ago, and I think continue to get bit and be interested in all the layers of it. The future of people at work started up in 2022. Folks like Jim Womack, Jeff Leiker, Jamie Benigni, Toshi Kitamura from TSSC got together and they were like, we have some concerns, particularly around like lean continuous improvement, where they're seeing tools being applied without a clear connection, over commodification of lean knowledge, right? Those who've practiced for a while know that there's depth and precision in practice that really leads to effectiveness. And then there's different influences that are catching the signals of senior business leaders. And we know that those core principles of kind of lean continuous improvement flow, that technology, when built upon it, proves really effective. When ignored, it can lead to some maybe misaligned paths. So they tried to had these conversations multiple times over the next few years with different groups. And it's kind of grown and expanded to a larger community who meets together in a symposium. It's not like a conference. It's more like you'll stand up and talk about concerns, and it's more cross-functional. So there are seven institutes involved now: the Ohio State, TSSC, GBMP, the Shingo Institute, Catalysis. And they all kind of meet together as sponsoring organizations. And then people come in and they talk about these topics related to the future of people at work. And then out of it comes these working groups. So there's like probably seven active working groups. One of them is Lean in Academia. Another one's like cross-functional communities. So you got design thinking and theory of constraints and some of those folks in there. And they're really interested in broadening the community and making sure that we're being high impactful in the way we're aligning to business in the future. Big topic is always tech. Tech is probably like stealing the day, AI and large language models. So there's a number of initiatives that have sprouted out of that.
Gosh, that's our favorite topic, right, guys? I mean, we've talked about that a fair amount. Tyson, thank you for being on today. It's good to see you again from getting to see you at O.C. Tanner years ago. Thanks for all your continued work with Lean and process improvement. This sounds like a cool symposium. I hate I didn't get the invite to that. But, you know, when you talk about tech today and the future of work, for our listeners, why don't you frame up kind of what are the big concerns? We all hear and we know kind of the workforce is changing in big ways. When you talk about tech and the future of work, what are y'all really spending time on today?
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of put it in several buckets. Obviously, one of the big themes about tech, AI is huge. We'll talk about that maybe third. But kind of the way tech workers work. So tech is a product. Agile is going through some disruptions. There's kind of a reconnecting to lean principles around scalable systems. A lot of the tech that we've seen propped up over the last 20 years are kind of like single point solution developments. So they do one thing really well, but they may not integrate to a whole ecosystem or consider the whole value stream. And this shows up all over the place, right? We know where you have improvement of a localized process, but you're sacrificing the whole. And there's another place where I call it, you're hearing a lot about tech-enabled teams, but the kind of reverse side of that is tech-encumbered value streams and tech-calcified value streams, where large organizations have thrown so many different software solutions or technology solutions to a workflow that it becomes difficult to suss out what the primary workflow is and what's the right philosophy we're approaching and kind of de-encumbering those technologies, those workflows, to make tech really be facilitative and helpful. And then the third aspect is huge in terms of AI and large language models and what it's doing to essentially anyone who's in the knowledge work realm. We see this as kind of like the disruption of the knowledge economy, where knowledge and technical information is going to be more accessible to lots of people. And it kind of is going to have this impact across organizations in the way both they're structured and in the way that people work, where we know that if we can enable AI in a way that reinforces human capability and adds to their ability to solve problems and collaborate with less bureaucracy and less dependence on technical knowledge, lean systems will really focus more on the socio aspect of the socio-technical system.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is fascinating, and it's really interesting that y'all right really picked alley, this Jay. Up. I know it really is up my alley. I remember having our first conversations maybe about the future of work 3 or 4 years ago on this podcast, when we weren't talking about AI, we were talking about remote work. That was the big disruption. And, you know, before 2020, very few of us had ever participated in remote work. Now all of us do to some form or fashion, you know, multiple times a month. You know, we do several meetings a day on Teams or some other virtual platform. So we were just really getting used to the new hybrid work life as the new future of work when large language models came into play and ChatGPT, and then all of a sudden this was something new. And before then, you know, we probably didn't use AI on a day-to-day basis. Now I use it every single day, and most everybody that participates in the working economy has used it to some extent. So there really is two big disruptions that have come within the last 5 years that we are trying to adjust to. So we'd love to hear kind of, one, did we ever successfully move into the future of remote work and hybrid scheduling? What does that look like? What is the state of that today? And then two, how does AI change that or add to that, make it more efficient, or is it just something completely different altogether that we have to adjust to again?
Yeah, so the good question. I think for sure the hybrid and remote work is still a challenge for most organizations. There's this weird social structure thing where it's like, if you're watching what I'm doing, then that's a problem. But then there's also like, if I can't get insight and observe the work as it happens firsthand, I can't coach and help you to find commonalities and benefits that we can spread across the group. So in a lot of lean transformation, when we go to do deep work with a client, there's one role that's critical that often gets overlooked, and that's kind of the role of the working team leader. And the role of the team leader in a TPS or a lean system is to observe the work as it happens and then attempt to socialize best practices and standardize across the group. And so as we've went to these remote or hybrid work environments, even before these environments, the role of the team leader was hard to hold on to. But as we went to them, that role becomes more critical. So it's like, how do we set up structures where someone can drop in, observe the work that you're doing firsthand, help capture best practices, do it in a human way where they're genuinely interested in the experience you're having, and then socialize this across groups. We see this role as like absolutely critical and even more essential as we speed into an AI-driven economy or a driven workforce, where what's being placed into workers' hands is the ability to create divergent, highly optimized workflows for them individually. And they're wanting to iterate quickly. So that role of team leader who can sit and drop into these operators, so you're not slowing them down in their innovation path, but you can socialize and spread those techniques across the team. So instead of having a big like single leader group where there are lots of individuals doing their own thing and high variation between worker output quality, you're marching forward in an advanced pace. So we just see that role as super critical. We see the role of managers shifting, where historically management and even silos in an organization were created around holding on to technical knowledge. If that base level of technical knowledge becomes available, right, holding that role based off that decreases. So the social capability of that manager to network, bring connections, see the whole value stream is going to increase in its value too. So I definitely think there's something we still got to figure out there in both cases. But those are the places we're seeing like experimentation and the macro trends impact the way we do lean work and look at organizational structure.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting for the parallels between the two, you know, disruptions of remote work and AI, you know, so some jobs have been completely replaced from in-person to remote. And we've had that internally at Baptist, where previously, you know, people in this building that used to be here are now completely remote. And that was an adjustment we had to make. But the majority of us are hybrid, or a lot more are hybrid, where you are still in person some days and remote others. I feel like the same is true for AI and large language models. Very few jobs are probably completely replaced by AI, but more it's we are working together with AI to be more efficient in that regard. Is that what you're seeing and what you're hearing?
So we see a few things. I read a LinkedIn post the other day where some product manager was commenting that he's like, I think it's rich that we're implementing AI to get a 10 to 15% productivity gain when I spend 80% of my time in meetings and working on the wrong things. And so certainly, right, we see this. We know that businesses and that the mechanisms of an organization are often geared to, like, how do I plug this thing in and make some gain out of it, rather than considering the impacts of it on your management system, on your people's capability, on your culture, on the work itself, and on your value-driven purpose. So we kind of see that asking those kind of lean transformation frameworks is critical to taking a deliberate path of evolution along that way. So I don't know if I answered your question exactly, but we're seeing some disturbing trends, but then we do know that if you take a measured practice to it, companies spend less money on tech and do it more appropriately.
Yeah. You know, I have a lot of questions. I may even give Brad a chance to ask a question himself, but
after this one, though, right?
After this one, of course. You know, have the expectations of managers changed now that their workforce has access to these AIs? Do we expect them to be able to turn around projects and, you know, presentations, other work analytics more efficiently, quicker, since they have these tools? Any insight into that? I know personally I can do things faster, but is the expectations of management changing?
Yeah, so it really depends on the sector. Like when we look at marketing and design work, it's completely upended the way they do work, like almost entirely. And it's completely reshaped the way management in those sectors work. Other areas, like, it's kind of funny, often management is the later one to respond.
Yeah.
And they respond out of the pain that's been created due to, like, a disharmonized application. So yes, we see those changing. We do not see them changing quick enough. The other challenge with AI is it has some double-edged swords, right? Like, there's good answers, then there's good questions. So someone knows how to ask AI good questions, they do better. And then there's context and value. So a disturbing trend is, right, it diminishes some ability to reflect. It props up the ability to generate a bunch of good enough ideas. Yeah. And so it can decrease kind of profound knowledge and acquisition of profound knowledge that enables automatic routines with an organization. So there's some disturbing trends with technology, and there are some impacts that it's having on people and their jobs. I think we're going to be in a turbulent time for the next couple of years. And I think the companies that ask questions deliberately and thoughtfully and have in mind their own core principles, they'll navigate this much better.
Yeah, I really like the discussion. And, you know, I saw something else recently that said we're thinking less. It's as it becomes easier to ask the computer a question and get an answer, usually a pretty good answer, that we're actually giving less thought to it. And I think the downstream of that is pretty concerning, ties into your point. And I really want to think about kind of, I'm thinking about our team at Baptist, and I'm thinking about managers and directors that oversee people. You know, what kind of advice would you give them today, Tyson, for how do you begin to look at incorporating technology that's available, widely available, and then how do you need to be thinking about the impact to your team that are still the social side of the socio-technical system that we talk about?
Yeah, so maybe one comment is on the slow reflection piece. I do think people in mass are reflecting less. I do think, like, I mean, that's not, you're a faith-based organization. Faith has certain deliberate reflection routines built in. So being deliberate about reflection routines is going to be super critical. And knowing that that's built into your system and the way you work, both on a personal level and on an organizational level, is critical.
Hey, hey Tyson, I just want to highlight that. What an awesome comment. I appreciate you bringing that up for certainly for our organization and our faith-based as an organization. But, you know, and again, even in work, I mean, we talk about the value of reflection and pausing to see what actually happened versus what do we think was going to happen. And so I love that, and really finding place to really hone in and give that due credit to reflection is something that's really powerful. Thank you for highlighting that.
Yeah, absolutely. This other question, managers, kind of what can we do to care for the socio-technical system, and what can we do to kind of to adopt these things? Actually, I've been thinking about, I think it's Collierville. Do you have a surgery center there?
Yeah.
Is that right? I went and visited that surgery center years ago, probably 10 years ago. And there was a nurse there. I don't know if she's a head nurse or something, but she was responsible for that surgery center. And there was this thing going on where each of the surgeons had their own packets. And the packets, they might only use 2 of the tools rather than 10 of the tools. And there was a high level of variation between surgeons, which led to a high level of variation in cost and waste. And this nurse was studying the work. She was attempting to understand which one was doing what. And then she'd carefully kind of like talk to each of the surgeons and be like, is it all right if we drop down the packet to a smaller level? And she was making gains, right? She understood the social part of the socio-technical system, right? You can go in there and be like, I know the solution. I've got it. GPT told me that all you bozos need to use the same tools.
Right.
We're on the same surgery techniques and we're implementing it tomorrow. And you'd have the best surgeons in the country leave your Collierville facility and look for somewhere else to practice surgery. And so this was like a perfect example in my mind of someone who was gaining interesting technical knowledge, studying the work, and then working to socialize it in a way that was appropriate, that maintained the relationship of the surgeons, the other nurses in the unit, and the facility overall. And I think if you can take that approach and reinforce that approach in the way that you look at AI and the way that you look at these technologies that you're adopting, right? What's the purpose? We've got to serve our patients and serve our mission. And we got to keep people together as we do it. So even if I find the right answer or 5 different answers, that role of that leader gets to focus on that. So I think your leaders and managers who have their identity in that type of work are going to do great. Mm-hmm. I think your leaders and managers who have their identity in their technical knowledge and in their silo and in being able to show up and correct people because they don't have the right technical information, they're going to have a little bit more of a time to kind of, they're going to need to reshape their identity around what they see as their role. And they're going to need to start practicing some of these other routines and learning from some of these other nurses or heads that take that different approach. It's just, it's a different world, and leaning into that social part of the socio-technical system is going to be critical, and studying the work deliberately.
No, I think that's really interesting. And you talked about the nursing side, but it's certainly true on the physician side. I mean, there's a dozen papers written every month that I read that talks about the comparison between expert physicians or residents or whoever, whichever group it is this week, compared to ChatGPT and reviewing these medical cases and coming up with the right diagnosis and the right treatment regimen. And the current state is, as of this recording, is that the AI by itself outperforms the physicians by themselves, and also outperforms the physicians plus AI, which is completely backwards from everything that we've ever been taught. And so if the physician's identity was, I am the best person I know, have all the knowledge, and I can come up with the best diagnoses and the best treatment plans, pretty soon everybody around the country is going to have that capability. And so the real differentiator is not going to be that, you know, how smart you are, how great you are at making the diagnosis, but how good you are at the social aspect and being able to make sure that patient is comfortable with that treatment regimen and will follow through with it. And all the other things that go into being a doctor besides just coming up with a diagnosis. So I do think that is a big change in the future of how doctors will work. And I would say the majority are, you know, it's the number that have adopted using AI versus the number that still need that haven't yet. It's growing. There's a water gap, and it's growing every day. But it's a big change to the practice of medicine that people really aren't aware of quite yet.
Yeah, it's going to be a fast-moving tide. And it can be kind of scary. So I think the physicians, I mean, most physicians I know, they got into the field to serve patients and to help people. So huge win, untraining some of their default behaviors to be able to lean into the human side, which is why they entered in the field in the first place, could take some time. But I mean, I know you guys, you're committed to helping people grow and taking people with you. So it's exciting to see.
But you've heard of, oh, he's a great doctor. Maybe he's got a terrible bedside manner, but he's a great doctor. You know, what is the future of that going to look like going forward?
Hopefully get some good feedback mechanisms from AI. Some tools. Your blood pressure is raising. Take a deep breath. You know, maybe you can teach him some response systems. You guys have some handy things, I bet.
Hey, Tyson, I want you to speak to kind of this balance of, you know, so you're in this symposium, this kind of think tank and work group that's working on the future of work. This is a fast moving train and it's changing so much. Jake, I thought the example was great. Just in a few months of how much this conversation has changed. What should we expect next? I mean, what do you think are the next kind of few steps on a very fast moving train that we should be looking for?
I mean, Jake, you could probably speak to this better than I could, but certainly organizations taking tools and building them themselves that allow you to leverage these things better, whether it's a RAG database that sits between you and the major LLM, or whether it's these small language models that are able to help deliver technical information in stream at a faster rate with lower friction and allow you to kind of secure the database that way. I think there's huge social impacts that it's like attention spans are dropping. Like, we're going to have to, like, as a society, we're going to have to get deliberate about reflection, things that used to be, I mean, every decade we get less space to be deliberate, to be forced to reflect. And so deliberate reflection is kind of a huge thing. The groups we talk to, I liken it to like colonialism when, you know, they're like, other countries are more used to this than Americans. Like, some conquering power shows up and they've got such a substantially high level of different technology that what you see is in the first waves, just like, I guess we have to adopt, and people's clothes start looking the same and then things are weird. And then eventually they get back to their roots and evolve out of it. I think that we'll probably at a high macro level, we'll see that and see a lot of that fear, right? Oh. Americans aren't as used to it. Like, the Japanese are the best at it. They take every wave and then they preserve what's uniquely them. I think it's because they're deep reflective people who value harmony and place that forward in their own culture. And so I think for us Americans, it will be a different adaptation, but, you know, let's be deliberate about how we reflect and what we think about and attempt to integrate it in a way where we can pair with it that enhances human capability and drives value.
Yeah, I want to ask another kind of bolt-on question there, thinking about kind of managers and how they manage. You talked about one of the other aspects is, you know, a technology that comes in and solves a piece of it, but it really disrupts the bigger process or system that's at play. How can managers be in tune to really looking at a macro process and identifying and articulating what their real process is to make sure that they're leveraging solutions that are actually helping them be more efficient?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that space has got to change for sure, because the ability to hyper-focus on a localized solution and drive gains also creates tremendous pressure on those handoff points. And I know it's something you guys deal with in medicine all the time with the different levels of both parallel work and interdependent work. So for the manager, right? One of the great things about these LLMs is they're able to provide you a good sounding base for socializing information. So learn prompt engineering and learn to say, like, what am I not considering about the organization that happens before me or after me as I implement these changes? Like, the models are actually pretty good at helping you carve out multiple perspectives before you bring it to the group. So, like, that's a simple thing. But the other piece is, right, we all run into situations where there's this large, complex organization And it's like, well, everybody needs to understand the whole value stream. And I'm like, are you insane? Like, I've studied the organization for 10 years and I'm still getting a grasp for how it
That's
works.
That's right. It's really hard to do, right? I mean, it's really hard for everybody to understand that. Yeah. How do you manage around that?
Right. So there are anchors, right? What is your value driven purpose? Like,
good.
Start there. What's the real problem you're trying to solve? And then what's the pull of the downstream customer? The closer you get to the delivery point, the closer you get to value. So the first priority is kind of like, what am I doing here that could, is it going to be harmonized with the next place this work passes to? So that's critical to tune there. And then this is, I'll put this on you a little maybe, Brad. But one role that's consistently maybe, I don't know if it's undervalued, but it's not advocated the way it should be. In Toyota, it's the role of a chief engineer, and they're looking across the whole value stream. In business process improvement type of thing, a chief process integrator. So you have to have some people within an organization who are equipped to look at the whole end-to-end process and have metrics that are appropriate for the end-to-end process and have visibility of that. I think I have another friend, Steve Perry, he's talking about a process flow engineer. So like, is it working? And so if you can kind of, one of the challenges with creating this position is that executives want to put it as its own department or in its own team. And it belongs attached to a chief executive. And it's not a huge department.
And that's how Toyota does it, right? I mean, the flow engineer is embedded in the work.
Yeah, they work across the value stream. Yeah. They work across those groups. And they have some sense of like modularity and how to compartmentalize things. So that's a role that has not always been leveraged. And I think executive teams need to consider that more as we have more interconnected supply chain systems. The manager themselves, find out what they're doing upstream and find out what they're doing downstream. Do not narrowly focus just on your area. Take some extra time, ask questions above and below, and collaborate.
Great advice.
All right, Tyson, I've waited long enough. It's been killing me to ask some questions. So here we go. You know, we know I have an AI question and I have a not an AI question. So on the AI side of it, we know that as we speak today, there are groups and companies out there that have created multiple agents, and those agents are more than just thought partners. They are interacting with them as if they were human. Now, I remember one gentleman saying, let me make this clear. Even though I've named all my agents and I've given them roles, you know, one was over digital marketing and another one was over something else. He says, I understand that's what they are. They're robots. They're not. But you could see a scenario that when the conversations are so fluid that you could forget that. So on that light of thinking, is the Lean Enterprise Institute, are they exploring anything? Like, am I going to have a John Shook agent that will interact with me on my A3?
Yeah, your question reminds me of like two of my favorite movies, the Blade Runner and the newer one. But
yeah.
So we are doing a little project, not really a little project, but Art Smalley, he's kind of a renowned like Toyota problem solver. And he dove into the AI thing probably 18 months ago. And he's been playing with like, we gave him some IP. He's playing with the Managing to Learn book and some other problem solving books in the Kaizen Express. And he's built kind of an interface where you can get really good feedback on your A3. We're going to have a webinar on it probably like September 17th, I think. And they'll push this little video where Art plugs it and you'll see John Shook react to having someone stuffed his brain into this LLM and see the level of feedback around both like technical, Socratic, these that happen with the tool. So I'm really excited. We see it as this opportunity. Like there's so many things that happen in Lean where you're working with someone and you're coaching them and you leave for a day and they've got questions and you come back and you got to tell them they went the wrong direction for 3 days and you're like, oh, right? So access to these tools should allow someone a better, like it's a coach augmentation. It helps people navigate and accelerate and be more connected to a positive kind of connection point to take steps on their own, improve their thinking.
Really good, Tyson. Okay, I got one more question before we kind of land the plane. But AI is obviously dominating the conversation for obvious reasons. This is a major disruption in our society. But I do have another question about the future of work, and I'm curious if you've explored this. And I'm gonna even verge on being that guy that says, get off my lawn. You know, I'm getting older in life. But there does seem to be a shift in how young adults coming out of school today think about work. Now, that someone could automatically take that comment to be negative. That's really not my intentions. But has there been any conversations in this symposium on that element, putting AI to the side, on how people think about work and what they want out of work and what they expect out of work? Anything there?
Yeah, I mean, there is a group around the future leaders and around kind of these principles. And this has been a comment and a theme around it from the beginning is like, when you look around, it's a bunch of maybe septenarians that are the champions of this movement. And how do we make space or create space and nurture the next wave of leaders? Yeah, kids coming out of school have got lower attention spans. It's easy to be like these kids these days. But if we take a look at the environmental factors that are shaping the way they move through school and do things, it's like, I think they're doing pretty darn good. They show up, they're curious, they're interested, they want to problem solve, they want to help society. Do they need coaching and nurturing and time from a trusted person who's genuinely interested in their success? Yes, absolutely. This is one of the challenges.
But don't we all?
Yeah, we all do. But they're growing up with less of it. Like when we see the way they're raised, their social circles aren't as tightly connected. They're not having as many in-person interactions. They're coming to us, I think, ready for a work environment that can do that. And I think we need to pay a special attention to that.
I think that was a fantastic place to land. Well, Tyson, just like back in April when we were at a conference together and I was wearing you out with questions and catching up with you, this was so good. My friend, I hope you'll come back on the podcast again. We'd love to hear about continued development, both at the Lean Enterprise Institute, as well as with some of this symposium. And you know, Brad and I are going to officially right now say we'd like to have an invitation to that because we'd like to learn more about that. But in all seriousness, though, Tyson, really appreciate you as a friend. Thank you so much for the great work you're doing. And thank you on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare at coming on the podcast.
I appreciate it. We love you guys and are committed to your mission. So whatever you need from us.